All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today we are talking about Queen and Slim from director Milena Matsoukas, starring Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner-Smith, as a couple that goes on the run after killing a police officer in self-defense. It is a heavy movie, but it's also got a lot of comedy to it. It's beautiful. It's, depending on who you ask, really well done. But I asked new co-host of the show, Colby Mack, and I was really glad to have Colby on this one. We had a great time talking about this movie, talking about the influences, and talking about how successful this movie is with the themes that it is trying to explore. It's a heavy movie. There's a lot to talk about. So we had a long conversation, but I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. So before we do get into that conversation, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and now on Podchaser. And you can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. And I also think you should join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all these movies and lots more. So join that group. We want to have lots of people in there. We have some great conversations in there. A couple weirdos, but you know, what Facebook movie group isn't filled with a couple weirdos? So with that said, let's jump into the conversation about Queen and Slim. Today's episode is sponsored by the Golden Tiki. Recently named one of the top tiki bars in the United States by the Food Network, and also one of the top 10 best nightlife destinations in Las Vegas by USA Today. They've got great rum, mixed drinks, and of course the Dole Whip. They've got theme nights, DJs, all kinds of fun stuff, including Alan Budd's Oasis, who are two robotic parrots that put on a great show every hour on the hour. So next time you're in Las Vegas, make sure to check out the Golden Tiki on Spring Mountain. All right, so today on the show, we're talking about Queen and Slim, and we got with us a new guest co-host. We got Colby Mack. How's it going, Colby?
Yo, 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 what up? It's your boy, Colby Mack, and I am on the Piecing It Together podcast.
I've been looking forward to hearing that. That's awesome. Hey, man, I'm really happy to have you here. I love what you do. And, you know, as we always do on this show, you know, when it's someone's first time on the show, I always love for them to introduce themselves to my listeners. So why don't you tell people about what you do?
Yeah. Well, it's your boy, the Movie Mac himself. Colby Mack. Of course, you can find me on all the socials at Colby Told Me on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're still into Facebook, you can find me at Colby Mack there. All of my written movie content at ColbyTomi.com. Pretty much I lead a solo podcast. I try to do it in 30 minutes or less. You know, movie news, reviews, that's about it. It's a pretty much whenever I want to deep down to further my conversation and amplify my movie reviews. And then I co-host the Minorities Report film podcast.
Beautiful. Yeah, it takes a lot of personality to do a solo movie review podcast because, you know, yeah, you don't want to just be like sitting there like, oh, and I really like the cinematography, you know, like you really got to have something to say, you know.
You know what? I think I grew up loving to talk to myself, so it works out, you know. Sometimes I'll talk back, but that's why I try to keep it to like 30 minutes or less, because some folks mm-hmm. be like, oh, this is going on too long. But, you know, I try to do it. You know, I'm a thespian, so I was really keen to doing one person shows in high school and college. So it's been working out. Sure. It's a good translation so far.
Awesome. Well, we're going to be talking about Queen and Slim today, and I know you've been making the rounds. You've been talking about this movie a lot out there. Was this one that was big on your radar before it came out?
It really was. There was three films in particular that were like my most anticipated of the year. And then kind of at the midpoint of the year, when I was looking at the rest of 2019, Queen and Slim was high up there. I love the trailer. Like, I think the trailer was
killer trailer.
Magnificently. I love when music can really amplify the trailer. And I'm one of the big proponents on having a trailer set my expectations, and that will color the way that I interpret the film, what the film is trying to tell me to expect. And unfortunately, a trailer can affect it. Some people, you know, kind of like don't say, oh, you should never consider the trailer. No, the trailer is a part of the overall film experience for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I mean, it really a lot of things can affect how you end up, you know, eventually enjoying the film when it finally gets into your brain and everything. And it's like, if you go into it with like, this movie just looks like crap, or if you go into it with like, I'm hyped for this movie, I cannot wait to see this thing, it really does make a difference.
It's all about the bar that you create. Some folks that I know, I know my boy Kevin Brackett, you know, on film Twitter, he didn't watch trailers at all. So the bar is set lower, and I think a film doesn't have to work as hard to try to, you know, to win you over, depending upon like, you know, what your entry point is. But we all have different frames of references. And I've seen some films where I've been unimpressed by a trailer, and then the bar is set lower to where it can do something that surprises me. And then now it's earned my investment to the film a lot. So it's unique how it's not for every film or for every genre, but it is unique what this one in particular did. And I was very excited to see it.
Absolutely. Me too. This is a interesting movie for us to cover on this particular show. I mean, I know I've got some puzzle pieces that I'm looking forward to talking about. I'm sure you've got some great ones. But the weird thing about this one is it's such a heavily political movie. And, you know, it's almost kind of weird to talk about it in terms of, you know, inspirations or, you know, things that it reminded me of. When, I mean, there's a very real issue in America that this movie is dealing with. And, you know, whether or not this movie, you know, deals with those issues responsibly, whether it has the right things to say about it, if there is a right thing to say about it, you know, that's really the real issue around this movie. And it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting talking about it, especially, you know, me as a white dude, like whether or not I even have the authority to talk about whether the movie handles it properly, you know, is, I think, an interesting point.
Oh, absolutely. And it's tough, you know, as a critic, you want, like me, I really do try to be mindful of a lot of different things. I call myself the most subjectively objective movie critic, because there's really not a way for me to try to separate the two. No film is objectively great or bad. But it's easy for a film to be subjectively great or bad because it makes it personal to you. And so I think that's interesting when I interpret this film. And this film markets itself and packages itself differently than other films. I was talking to someone earlier today, and it's like, you know, obviously we know that this is a black film championed by black filmmakers, first-time feature filmmakers, first-time feature director, first-time feature writer with very strong viewpoints, and they have a following. Maybe there's an unfair expectation that a lot of these, some people call them woke films, like they have to say something. Like, why can't we have a black film that just lets it be a black film? And it's tough, but it's also unfair. And unfortunately, we live in a world that is unfair. And I think that there's themes that are tackled in this film, some good, some or many not so good, but we'll kind of get into those.
Sure, absolutely. Well, why don't we start getting into some puzzle pieces? What do you got for your first one?
I think the biggest thing, and someone asked me like what I was expecting when I watched this film, said about two things. First puzzle piece is that I wanted Queen and Slim to deliver the beauty and grace of Barry Jenkins' If Beale Street Can Talk with the poignance and relevance of the Netflix series from Ava DuVernay, When They See Us. So my first puzzle piece is If Beale Street Can Talk. My number one film of 2018. It's hard to sometimes describe like what that film was, but it's like, it really is like a painting on the screen. And honestly, like that is the truest film that I've kind of close to call a masterpiece. And I still feel it even after so long that I watched from it. And it's exceptionally powerful. It's very moving. It's like this ode to black love. And hearing interviews that Lena Waithe talked about, she was very intentional with Queen and Slim on delivering a black love story minus a white lens. And to be honest with you, the black love story in this film, if that was her initial goal, this film succeeds at it. In the same way that the love story that we got in Beale Street Could Talk, in the face of, I mean, you know, being back in the 60s and a part of New York that was just staunch with, you know, with racism and a lot of just strifes that people have to deal with. But like the character of Stephen James and Kiki Layne in that film, you know, it was so strong and so believable and so authentic and so unique. I mean, the visuals and the cinematography was so great to really show the best parts of what Black Beauty looks like on screen. And I think that really was like Melina Masukis, the director of this film. She's got a very strong background, and she's primarily known for being like a really amazing music video director. She's got a very staunch and keen eye in capturing the beauty of Black skin on screen. And the camera work is very stylized. Like, I love the framing of the shots of like this urban aesthetic that she's really, really good at setting the mood with the visuals and with the music and creating that love story. And I think that that parallel to Beale Street Could Talk is the strongest connection for me.
Right on. Yeah, I like it. I like it as a puzzle piece. And I mean, it is such a beautiful film, If Beale Street Could Talk. And the way that like every scene is just like kind of bursting with light, you know, even though it, you know, what's happening, there's so much sadness to it, you know, and so much, you know, heartbreak. It really does come from a similar place, I think, where there's so much beauty in that just, you know, just heartbreak, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go for my first puzzle piece. I'm going to take something actually you were just saying there. About If Beale Street Could Talk, I think I'm going to use that as kind of a transition, because that is actually one of my favorite scores of the year.
Oh my God.
Of last year, I mean. Yeah. So good. So incredible. So I'm going to talk a little about the music, because I think that a movie that I want to use as a puzzle piece is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which, okay, of course, is a very different kind of a music score. However, we are going on this journey through the South where we're coming across all these different, like, colorful characters that, you know, they're all so memorable in their own different ways. And along the way, everything is marked by music. There is so much music in the movie. And Queen and Slim, every scene kicks off with music starting, and then boom, we're into a new location or into meeting new people, and the music just would work as its own, you know, soundtrack, you know, and totally beautiful, totally just a killer soundtrack, really. And so I think Oh Brother, Where Art Thou kind of has a similar, you know, South journey and that soundtrack aspect.
Yeah. Oh my God! I really want to burst into song as George. what year was that? My good, that was like that song was everywhere.
I want to say 99. I think I think it was 99. But yeah, it's just so good. Maybe 2001. It was somewhere right in there. Yeah, 99, 2001.
It most certainly was, man. That's really, really, yeah. I think the music of this film, like I said, is really, really strong. And obviously with, you know, with Melina Masukis's music video background, totally, it was crafty the way that they blended in the there was nothing as pronounced of the score like what Nicholas Britell did in Talk. But I think, you know, this being a urban film, a contemporary urban film, having that blend of the score with the soundtrack and describing like the different shades of what the Black experience is musically, that, like you said, you know, with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, it's this Mark Twain buddy journey as they're going across the states. And we're spending time with Queen and Slim traversing from Ohio down to Florida. And we shift from rap to soul to jazz to all these different blends of what kind of describes the Black sound, which I think was really creative and it was done well.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it like it encompasses like a lot of the different genres that could be described as, you know, Black music. So yeah. I think that's great. What do you got for your next piece?
Yes, my next piece is going to be Ava DuVernay's Netflix series When They See Us. Obviously there's a focus on opportunity, and Ava DuVernay carved out an opportunity to talk about a story that was kind of forgotten with the Central Park Five rape case back in New York in the 80s. And the fact that these men were wrongfully accused of a crime they didn't commit. And it tackled and battled against this, you know, the New York powers that be, that were set on policing badly just to find a sense of justice. And when I reviewed When They See Us earlier this year, this came out this past spring, I gave it a perfect score. It was truly a 10 out of 10 because it did all of the objective elements that make a story work. Was great. As a puzzle piece, I'm not saying that Queen and Slim works, but I do see the potential that it had to try to be something like that. The love story in this film is the strongest thing. And when I spoke to you earlier about the way that the film was packaged, the way it was filmed and packaged to me is that this story wanted to do multiple things. It wanted to champion a love story, but also talk about a social and political commentary about our times. It attempts to do that, but it never carries it fully in the way in which When They See Us did. When They See Us provided a big, nuanced conversation, and several points throughout this film, there's an attempt to have a conversation, and when it does attempt to do it, it just leaves it and it hangs there. And then when it doesn't at all, it's kind of frustrating. It was frustrating to watch When They See Us because it's heartbreaking of these events that happened within my lifetime. I mean, I grew up in New York, you know, around the early 90s. So I was very much aware of these stories. And I was really hoping that it can live up to that. And unfortunately, it didn't. So the social and political commentary that worked in When They See Us fell very flat in Queen and Slim.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, that it makes absolute sense what you're saying. And I do agree that the love story is really where it's at for this movie. I mean, it's a great love story. It's moving. It's funny. It's just a really, really great story when it comes to that. And then whether or not it's successful in the rest of what it's trying to pull off, that's where, you know, the question definitely comes up. I think that's a great, you know, kind of setup for another puzzle piece I was going to talk about, which was, of course, Fruitvale Station, which, I mean, this movie, you know, of course, is, you know, fiction, but is, of course, inspired by so much of the, you know, true life, you know, violence happening, you know, and with, you know, police brutality and all that across the country. And, you know, again, whether or not it is, you know, whether it's commenting on it in the right way, and especially the way that the movie ends, you know, I don't really know, but I do know that it's definitely inspired by what's happening.
Yeah.
You know? So what do you got next? Because that's my next piece is Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, these two I'm going to kind of lump together, and maybe it's a little bit of recency bias. 21 Bridges and Black and Blue. Okay. Two films that have just released, you know, a few weeks apart from one another that were also packaged in a similar way to one be a crime drama, the other to be a crime actioner. Well, I guess they almost were very, very similar to kind of provide a little bit of action, but they both also attempted to kind of have a conversation on policing. Now, if the film never attempted to, you know, purport itself to be that, if it was just saying this is just going to be a crime drama or a crime action film and not try to have a conversation, it'd be different. But when I look up a film synopsis prior to a film comes out and that's a part of it, then that's why, like, it's kind of stuck. And that's what informs, you know, my expectation on it, right?
Sure.
So at those puzzle pieces, when I'm looking at it compared to the lens of Queen and Slim, they both attempted to do it, but for different reasons, failed in the same way that Queen and Slim did. The one thing that I commend Queen and Slim that they did better than those other two films is that the traffic stop that happens inside of Queen and Slim, I actually think is one of the best crafted traffic stops in light of kind of these themes that I've seen on screen probably ever. A lot of folks never get the opportunity to see a traffic stop go wrong. Because unfortunately, what ends up happening is that there's lives lost when it does go wrong. Except this is the flip. The life that lost is the one of a cop. Able to kind of see, you know, Slim. And I think it actually is pretty beautiful that we don't have the protagonist's names throughout the entire film until the very end of the film.
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, so we know that, you know, Daniel Kaluuya's character's name is Ernest, and then Jodie Turner-Smith's character's name is Angela. These two have a date that doesn't turn out too great because, you know, Ernest makes a swerve and a cop pulls him over. And, you know, for whatever reason, the cop pulls him over is that reason. But we're able to see the events as a black man, I have no idea what is expected of me at a traffic stop or what I'm supposed to accept of a police officer at a traffic stop. But the one thing that I do know is that I'm in a position of being vulnerable and essentially subservient to whatever this police officer is telling me to do. And I just have to hope that they're doing the right thing. In 21 Bridges and in Black and Blue, the conversation that they wanted to have about social justice and police brutality gets undercut because it's portraying cops as dirty cops. There's a very big difference between a dirty cop and a cop that's doing bad policing. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Like overextending their authority versus straight up like running drugs or some shit.
Exactly. And in 21 Bridges, we quickly see, like we can very much see that, oh, these cops are up to no good. So it's not that they're bad cops doing their jobs badly. They're just dirty cops. So when anything happens to those characters, I have no sympathy or empathy towards that because there's no nuance. You've told me that they're on the same footing as the bad guys. So the bad guys are the bad guys too. You know, and the good guys are also the bad guys. As we're in Queen and Slim, even though we can see that this cop is doing some unethical things.
Yeah.
It's not overtly, you know, it's not dirty. There was no reach. I'm like, okay, I was wondering if Lena Waithe is going to like, you know, have this cop plant drugs or something like that. I think that he was just very bullish on finding something. And then when cops sometimes can take it personal in, you know, these type of interactions when they feel like that their authority is being checked. So they puff up their chest and, you know, maybe overstep those boundaries, but within reason, you know, they really kind of, they straddle that line instead of fully crossing it. Even unholstering his weapon, in my opinion, that's crossing the line, but it's, you know, I don't think that he went in there with the full intent. Like, I'm going to kill. I really don't think that. And keep in mind, this is a black man saying that. I don't think that that was his intent, but things escalated and then he got a little bit, you know, more of that back and forth. So that's the one thing that Queen and Slim actually did bring to the traffic stop that did well in portraying this as a cop that was doing bad police work and not a dirty cop.
Sure. Yeah, I think it has a lot to say, first of all, with Melina Masuka's direction. I mean, you know what's going to happen in that. It's in every trailer, and yet it was still so tense every second of that traffic stop. It was crazy.
It was all the prologue to the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you knew every beat that was about to happen, but it's just... Yeah, and then I think also some credit where credit's due to Sturgill Simpson playing the cop. He's a non-actor, really, but a great singer, and he did a great job doing that role. I mean,
he's not an actor? I haven't looked into him. So he's not an actor?
Yeah, no, he's a country singer, and he's actually really good, and one of the few country singers I actually listen to. And he's been in two movies this year. He's in The Dead Don't Die also.
What?
I was shocked.
I didn't mind, you know, like I feel like that he was physically imposing. I was supposed to be. There was things that he was doing with his eyes. He was kind of shifty and, you know, shout out to him. Okay.
Yeah, right. There you go. Well, I'm going to go with another piece here. And, you know, speaking of Melina Masukas, I am going to talk about another music video director who made the jump to film for a little while anyway, and that is Hype Williams with Belly.
Deep cut. Okay.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, come on, another director who really knows how to make a stylish looking piece of cinema, you know, something that everything just kind of glows and is just so damn beautiful the way that Hype Williams used to make things look back in the day. And I don't know what Hype's been up to lately, but I don't know.
I mean, the music video era kind of for me died out in like 2008.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, where, and it's weird where we have access to music videos way more than we ever have before. But like, I remember when you participated in a music video's release and it was on TRL and BET for 2.5 months. And that was a big thing to see like, what's the number one played video, you know, in the country. So yeah,
it was the best.
I miss those days.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, no, and I mean, I don't know if he did much after Belly. I'm sure he did a couple things, but, and of course, Belly, you know, as a narrative, I mean, it's a completely different movie, but just the bringing that sense of style, I think, it, you know, clearly probably inspired Melina in some ways, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely see that as well.
For sure. What do you got for your next one?
Yeah, so this one's gonna be a little bit out of the box, and it's only because of the, you know, the Mark Twain-esque style of travel. But I'm gonna go with the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Nice. I was actually thinking about that
because it's very similar in the way that we have these two characters that shouldn't be linked to one another that are, and they only are because they're pitted in this journey that just happens to go kind of in the same direction. Obviously in Queen and Slim, it's for very different reasons. They are on the run after, you know, killing a police officer in self-defense. Where in, you know, you have Zach Gostigan, he is escaping a mental institution that is not properly taking care of him as, you know, as a, I want to find like the right word, you know, a, I really hate He himself doesn't suffer mental illness, but he just needs to be cared for in a different way. And he was misunderstood and was in a facility that was not going to do that. And he had a destination that he wanted to get to, which I think also was in Florida.
I think that's true. Yeah.
I think it was also in Florida. So, I mean, uniquely, they kind of, you know, have these similar paths and were just there for the journey. And along the journey, there's a brotherhood that begins to manifest between, you know, Zach Gostigan's character and Shia LaBeouf's character. And it's done in an incredibly tender and sweet way. The one thing that I'll commend the Peanut Butter Falcon for doing better than Queen and Slim is that we had an opportunity to really dig a little bit deeper into the reasons for the decisions in which they're making, where I was very convinced of the authenticity of all their choices and it didn't feel contrived. Unfortunately, in Queen and Slim, a lot of the choices felt very illogical and overly emotional for what was presented to us in the diner. And that's because there's a lot that Lena Waithe as a storyteller is trying to tackle in the screenplay and it lacks the narrative focus, as like what in the Peanut Butter Falcon, you know, really did well with that.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. The difference there. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. All right, I'm going to go with another piece here. So, you know, obviously, you know, spoilers abound on this show. But at the end, we get, you know, Daniel Kaluuya with the slow motion police lights, and we just know what that means. And there was another movie a couple of years ago where Daniel Kaluuya gets confronted by those police lights. But we had a completely different situation there where we all got to breathe a sigh of relief, and that was, of course, Get Out. It wasn't the police Correct. And shit didn't go bad, you know? And so this, in this movie, we are getting the opposite of that. We are getting where, oh shit, it is the police. And oh, this is about to go terrible. It's kind of flipping the script on that moment.
I found it weird how quick the police arrived. Like, it was probably like 15 seconds after they arrive in the tarmac and they see this plane. Like, they're seeing freedom in front of them. And the police are right there to cut them off. And I got to say this, me personally, that last scene is emotionally manipulative. I was really checked out for a bulk of the second and third act. This scene on its face is really, really strong and powerful. It's also very traumatic. There's a lot of people that will decide not to watch this movie, knowing that this type of scene can possibly exist inside of it, because it's hard to see. I'm a big proponent of justice. And the one thing that, you know, that plagues me as a Black man is the idea that when all these things happen, and the things that ail us in this country, like the issues with social injustice and police brutality and just policing in general, is the idea of like, what is justice? And I'll ask anybody that scene, you know, that that sees Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner-Smith, you know, faced with a decision, can we really say that justice was served?
Right.
Exactly. You know, like I can't imagine any just law enforcement saying like, you know what, I feel good. I feel like I did what my job, it doesn't. And I feel like if you, as law enforcement, you know, can say that, you shouldn't be able to sleep at night with yourself. But if you can't, then I feel like we need to combat that. And I was really hoping that this film would just at least open up a conversation to combat it. Like, you know, have a media story to do that, or other characters in the film have that conversation. So it was a tough scene to watch, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's different.
I feel like the choice was made like very deliberately to, you know, be provocative by ending way, you know, and not to give us anything resembling, you know, a happy ending or anything for these mm-hmm. characters, or feel like justice was served, like to make us mad, you know?
Yeah. And it's weird because, you know, I'll slide in another puzzle piece to kind of like attach to that. If you think of Denzel Washington in Training Day, it's a very similar ending.
Right,
and yet
right.
I felt completely different about it. And I think it's because the way that film was crafted, I had a lot more time to spend with Lonzo and understanding what makes this man tick. And that's just an homage to the screenplay, doing a better job at giving me the full color to, you know, his journey that I was lacking for me. And Queen and Slim, even though as effective as that scene was inside of Queen and Slim, it definitely was a little bit emotion manipulative because I can't not feel for it. I just can't, even though I feel like it didn't earn it.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's that manipulation, but I mean, it's nice to look at along the way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it most certainly is, but, it was tough to stomach with a lot of things. I mean, this was the first film this year that I almost walked out of.
Wow.
Yeah. The protest scene.
Okay. I'm interested. What about it specifically?
I'll give you the another puzzle piece. I came with a lot of them. The Hate U Give last year with Imanla Stenberg that had a very a huge protest scene that I was background on, actually. Shout out. It was right here in my backyard here in Atlanta where it was shot, right down the street from where I live. And it was like being a part of it. It was really, really cool to get back to it. You know, I've taken a little break from behind, you know, from in front of the camera. So it was nice to kind of stretch my legs a little bit and stuff. But, you know, I love the way that protest scene happened because, one, we had full focus on it. So a couple of different things about the protest scene in Queen and Slim. It was, for some really tasteless reason, intercut with a graphic sex scene.
Sure.
Which, like I said, it's that. And I think what's happening is that Lena Waithe, she's a first-time feature writer. She's a little bit too attached to the story. And I'd be very interested to hear, you know, her commentary on it, or like the decision to spice it together. Maybe that was a Melina, you know, decision or not. But to have this protest scene that on its own should have a lot of relevance in the film, intercut with this very tender moment that blossoms into, you know, I'll say this. I don't want to say unusual. Unusual isn't the word. Unconventional lovemaking. We don't get a chance to see that in film. One, it was a very long scene. Two, we typically don't see two darker skin black leads in a love scene, you know, traditionally. And that was the whole point with trying to have this love story minus the white lens. And typically you don't get multiple pumps in a movie. Like then you go to like the NC-17 rating, but there's multiple pumps and it is pretty graphic. Yeah. On its own, both of those scenes could have been powerful. Where the scene completely falls apart, and in my mini review, I called this movie socially irresponsible, was there's a young boy in the film, kind of like Imanla Stenberg's character, and Imanla Stenberg's younger brother in The Hate U Give, who angrily pulls out a gun. And it was so undeserved. Like it wasn't earned. There was nothing that we learned from that character when we were first introduced to the young boy inside of Queen and Slim. He has this, you know, kind of very narrow, you know, idealized version of who Queen and Slim are. And he said some very poetic things and you could hear that coming. Like that's, it's like as if Lena Waithe is speaking right through this young actor. He's a good young actor too. And it says, you know, I want to be immortal. Bro, you are 12, go to school. Like don't worry about being immortal or nothing like that. Right. So I could understand those words like that from like a 25 or a 35 year old man that's been dealing with so much life where it's pressing upon him. And it's like looking for something more. And this kid rushes into the protest and is angry. And I'm okay. You're angry. But then we know as an audience, okay, if this kid doesn't calm down, I think that he's going to be a victim, right? Like, we're all thinking it. The protesters are hype. The cops are hype. And there's this black cop that comes up to us and says, yo, you don't want to be here, man. And I'm just really hoping, like, I hope another cop doesn't see this, you know, this encounter and misconstrue it, and then it heightens everything. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, oh my God, please don't beat this little kid up on screen. Please. And then the kid pulls out a gun. Bro, in my mind, a cop is going to see this kid pointing a gun at another cop and is going to kill this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then this kid kills this cop. The cop that's been very nice and pleasant to him, wasn't yelling, wasn't being like combative, blows his brains out. Right before that, we see them climax together. It was just, I didn't understand it. I almost walked out, and there was no, all the age, like every good intention that I was really trying to give this film just went out the window.
Yeah, I wish I knew what the intention was. Like, you know, it's possible to throw a couple of ideas out there, but I mean, yeah, I just don't know. I think it's a little misguided to have combined those scenes that way. I think on their own, they could have worked much better. Even still, the kid, like, that just seemed so out of place. I don't know.
Yeah. And in this climate, we got to understand that there's arguments to be made on both sides of the conversation. The conversation that I feel like this film doesn't really have, but there's folks that really, like, I had people talk to me on Twitter that said, I have no interest in watching a film about a black couple that are going on a cop killing spree. Legitimately, people think that this film is about a cop killing spree across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a scene like that that would, like, let them believe that that was right.
Right, exactly. You know?
And yeah. If there was, because, and even after that scene, there's no conversation. You know, when Queen and Slim are made aware that this kid, like, they were asked by Flea and Chloe Savini's characters, hey, a kid died at a protest. Did you tell him to kill a cop? Mm-hmm. I'd be like, no. And that would have been the great opportunity to have this conversation. We got this black couple. We got this white couple. Let's talk, right? Mm-hmm. Find a way to artistically craft this scene together. So that way we can know, all right, what is your standpoint on this? Maybe let's hear, you know, multiple sides to it. Maybe that could have been an opportunity for this couple to say, you know what? I think a better way to defend yourselves is to turn yourself in. But they never had that conversation. And like, it just completely gets left, and oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I can completely see where you're coming from there. That it definitely is frustrating. Well, I'm going to go to another puzzle piece, and I think something you were just saying about, you know, people thinking it's like they're just going across countries killing cops or something like that. You know, obviously, even Bokeem Woodbine makes the joke, the Black Bonnie and Clyde. I'm going to use Bonnie and Clyde, but as kind of an anti-puzzle piece, because that, you know, the joke is made, but that's not what this is. And I think they go, you know, they made every effort of making sure that this is not that story. This is not a Black Bonnie and Clyde story or anything like that, or a 21st century update to that or anything like that. This is something completely different, even though on the surface we know people are going to think it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, especially because that line was inside of the first trailer. Mm-hmm. So it's something that sticks with you, because those are characters that, like, really, unfortunately, we never should have praised them, but they were kind of glorified. I mean, think, we have icons in the music industry like Jay-Z and Beyonce. One of their first collaborations was Bonnie and Clyde 04.
Right.
You know? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, there's this romanticization of Bonnie and Clyde, but, like, they were doing bad things. And so it was a little irresponsible to package a film that way. And maybe that's to kind of say, like, oh, the media twists things. You know, we say Bonnie and Clyde, but, like, this isn't it. Like, yeah, but we gotta, you know, there's a lot of people that are just gonna latch onto that.
Yeah,
for the wrong reasons, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, before we move on to your next piece, also just, you know, shout out Bokeem Woodbine's hilarious in this movie.
Yo, Uncle Earl.
So, like, good.
It's weird. I didn't think that the tone... I felt like this comedy didn't fit the tone of the film, but on its own, this comedy was so funny.
So good.
And I really didn't want to laugh because I was frustrated at the movie, but like he was kind of refreshing. He brought this levity that I had no idea we were going to get in this film. And just his line delivery, his affectations, like he has a scene where he's just sitting down at a coffee table, like looking at his rings and he's counting them like, did you take my ring? it is so funny. It is so, just his encounter with the cop who I guess was like dating one of his girls. It is, wow. It is funny, but I did not want to laugh.
I know, right?
Oh, man.
It could have been such a different movie if we had just stayed at Uncle Earl's house the whole time. Best comedy really of the year.
You know what? I asked myself, as you know, writing both comedy and drama, I wonder if the entire tone, if we would have changed it to be a little bit more lighter, right? Like, sure. Is there a way that this film could have played out as a comedy? I think comedies do a great job at being biting, but then also being a satire and a reflection to society. I mean, if you look at Jojo Rabbit, it's a satire about the absurdity of hating something that you don't understand, told through the lens of a child. Mm. And that was incredibly strong. Like, great, I'll take, all right, perfect. I'll grab that as another puzzle piece, you know, using that. And maybe a lot of my puzzle pieces can kind of feel like anti-puzzle pieces because I did not like this film. But it also, like, I can see where it was going, right? Mm. I really, really do. And even when I came to, like, my final rating on this film, I had to be respectful about, like, what the intent was. And then also, like, I'm not too sure how your audience received it. My audience loved it.
Oh, Queen and Slim?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a great audience experience. Yeah. People were really into the movie.
Yeah, and it was tough. It was tough to kind of sit through. I personally didn't clap and cheer when the police officer got shot. I found that to be a little bit disheartening. And just, I feel like it could have been taken, but I get it. Like, I completely understood. I understood the geographically where I was, you know? Mm. So I got that, right? But yeah, it definitely, I was wondering how it would play depending upon like different audiences, but, you know, I think I'm out of puzzle pieces.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know what? In that case, I just got one more. And, you know, before I do that, I do think it's interesting. A lot of the pieces that you talked about were such recent movies. And I think that says something to the moment that we're in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where we're going to be talking about a lot of these things mixed into other kinds of stories, whether it be a love story, on the road story, you know, whatever. We're mixing in a lot of these themes into these movies.
Yeah, no, it's... And I think it's kind of, we're at a point where a lot of the content, because we digest so much content, I think there's an unspoken itch that we have to try. Like we need something else too.
Sure.
You know, like this is not a popcorn movie, you know, like
right,
you just
right.
eat popcorn and just keep like here. No, I think there's these films that come along where it needs to speak a little bit. I think directors are a little bit more conscious of that.
Sure.
And some are more overt than others. And it's just a shift in our climate. And that's because the climate that we're in, it seems that there's a lot of things that are at stake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all right, I'm going to do one last one and then we'll get to some closing thoughts. But last one, and this might seem a little bit silly, but I'm just going as a genre with superhero movies. And the reason why is because it seems like a running theme through a lot of superhero movies. Maybe this is more of a DC thing than a Marvel thing, but is the hero that, you know, is becoming more of an image, you know, despite a lot of public scrutiny and, you know, they have to hide from the public while they're finding their footing as a hero and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And, you know, Queen and Slim, there be, you know, this is basically like an origin story of this symbol of fighting back. Mm-hmm. And so I think in a lot of ways it uses a little bit of that kind of hero trajectory.
Kind of like with Katniss Everdeen, like they unwillingly became a symbol.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's no Mockingjay in this film, but unfortunately, like, you know, they become immortalized, you know, on murals and t-shirts. And I don't want to call them heroes because I think heroes ultimately do good. And even though that they did nothing bad, they did not, like, they're not criminals in the sense that they went out to shoot and kill a cop. They killed this cop in self-defense.
Sure.
But everything that happens after that, they don't actually make any good choices or do good things. They're literally just trying to escape. But, you know, they become, their story becomes bigger than themselves. Their story transforms into a legacy and like a rallying cry, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's unfair on them. They're just trying to survive. But
yeah, they didn't ask for this.
They most certainly did it, but they're also very much aware of it. Like they become aware very early that they know that you know, the Black community at the very least is in their corner. When they're trying to get a cheeseburger, you know, when they're trying to get their car fixed and stuff, they are aware, and it's unique to see that. And I think because we want something good as Black and Brown communities, and then of non Black and Brown communities that are advocates to cheer for. We've spent a number of years hearing about, you know, the, you know, Philando Castillos, about the Sandra Blands, and you know, we're tired of it, you know, and this is something, even though it's fiction, it's different. So I can't knock folks for wanting to root for this film. And it's tough to vocalize a lot of what I've been saying about it. And I've gotten a lot of backlash, to be honest. So it's, I will say, even though I didn't fully enjoy this film, I think that the conversation that we're having outside of it sometimes has been really, really healthy.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Why don't I do the finish puzzle, and then we'll get to a couple more closing thoughts on the movie. Yeah. Finish puzzle for Queen and Slim included If Beale Street Could Talk, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, When They See Us, Fruitvale Station, 21 Bridges, Black and Blue, Belly, The Peanut Butter Falcon, Get Out, Training Day, The Hate U Give, Bonnie and Clyde, Jojo Rabbit, and superhero movies.
Wow.
Yeah, wild list all over the place. But I mean, this movie is an interesting thing. You know, I think my first closing thought would be, I'm really curious to see what Melina Matsoukas does next. I'm curious to see if she is the director that does really beautiful love stories, you know, or things, you know, human stories, things like that, or the political filmmaker, the side of this that is pushing buttons and the side of this that is interested in, you know, getting to big issues and things like that. I'm curious if it's one or the other, or if it's going to be continuing to go down a path of combining things like that. You know, I think that's an interesting trajectory for a new, fresh director.
Yeah, and I think the momentum that both her and Lena Waithe have, irregardless of what a lot of different pundits, commentators, movie reviewers, and critics have of the film, that they are responsible with using that momentum to project their thoughts and ideas and wishes forward. One, I guess, shout out to Melina Matsoukas. She won Best Breakthrough Director at the NBR Awards just the other night, the National Board Review. You know, these the precursor award season that we're in right now, and, you know, I don't see this as an Oscar-worthy film, but obviously there's a voting body that thought that her direction as a breakthrough director was strong, and that's the one thing that I absolutely will congratulate this woman doing. And I think that she has the eye to do it. It's the director's job to tell the story through images, and that's exactly what she did. It's the writer's job to sell us on the story with its characters and the plot. Lena Waithe, in the short time that she's been in like the public space, she has carved out a name for herself. She's doing The Chi, which is a Showtime series, and she's got a lot of content coming out on BET Plus. And, you know, she was in Ready Player One, and she's doing AT&T commercials and all this other stuff. She ain't going nowhere. And I'll say this, she is taking it like a champ with the detractors of this film. I made my review very public. She liked it, and she thanked me, and we had like a little conversation back and forth. So I was good, and I said that is dope of you to really, one, there's a lot of folks who tell stories that like we just think that, oh, they don't hear anything. No, they do. And obviously she did, and she sees it and she reacts, and she just thanks people for being able to have, you know, the conversation for those that love it and for those that don't. And I think that's a very graceful way to go about your business. So yeah, I really hope that both of them really continue to tell stories and learn from it. Learn from the good, learn from the bad.
Hell yeah. Any other final thought on this one before we wrap it up?
Yeah, shut up. No, Daniel Kaluuya, the boy can do no wrong. I love it when you find an actor that I don't care what the movie is. All I know is that his name is attached to it. I will watch it. Anything with Daniel Kaluuya, I will watch. The boy can elevate any script I've seen. I was in love with the script, and anything that had to do with him, he killed it.
You know? He sure did. He was perfect in this.
He really, really is. He's a very, very gifted performer. And even Jodie Turner Smith, green mm-hmm. in some areas where I think she didn't elevate the script, but you know, it's her first, you know, feature role. I will say this, she's an effortless beauty. There's this very kind of angelic breathiness to Definitely. Her vocal. And that's just like, wow, she sounds like a dream girl. And she definitely did look like it on screen. So I really, you know, hope to see her do more work. But I'll say this, this last word, onto like kind of where I am. You know, objectively, a lot of strong elements. Subjectively, because of the way the film was packaged, it didn't meet my expectations. But I'm glad that I approached things respectfully enough to understand that I just can't singularly allow my unmet expectations to color my entire criticism. So I'm glad to be able to have conversations like this that I think that this film, if it doesn't do it well in the film, at least forces us to have a conversation outside of it to talk about it.
Sure. That absolutely makes sense. What's another movie that you watched recently that you want to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, man. Most recently? I'll do this. I just posted it this afternoon. Is Netflix's and Marty Scorsese's The Irishman.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed.
Yeah, talk about a movie you could talk about for a while.
I mean, the movie itself talks about itself for a while, right? it's unique. It was a chore to try to find time to watch the movie. I'm a husband, I'm a father, and 3.5 hours in home without any distraction is damn near impossible.
That's why I love the theater so much.
People. Oh my gosh. And I really did try, but you know, just with the nature of how the film was released, it was really, really difficult to find it anywhere. And it's like, well, I'm not going to go watch it in a theater because it's finally available the day before it comes out on Netflix. That just doesn't make sense. Sure. But The Irishman, it is, I guess if I want to like, you know, poke fun, it's pure cinema. It's a whole lot of cinema. It's more cinema probably than we can handle. And at 3.5 hours, I think Marty says everything exactly that he wants to say, and Netflix has no problem paying him to do it. But for me, though, does it live up to hype? I don't think so, man. I think everybody's being super hyperbolic saying that this is a game changer. But it's not a bad film. Like, not at all. I think the direction is really great. I think the acting performances are fantastic. I think the production design and the music is really, you're going to love, as you as a music guy, you're going to love the music. I thought it was really, really good throughout.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just doesn't do anything special for me.
I think the thing with this movie, and you know, I really, really love it, but it has to sit with you. And it may still not open itself up in any way. You know, obviously everyone's different, but I think definitely sit with it for a while. You've already sat with it 3.5 hours. Sit with it for a while longer because it's definitely a grower for me. I mean, I've found myself liking it more and more by the day since I got to see it.
I'll say that since I watched it night before last and some of the conversations I've had this afternoon since I posted my review, there's been things that people have talked about that's let me see it. So you're absolutely right. There are some films that, you know, if you weren't completely sold on, with time, it can just start sitting with you. And with having the dialogues like this, it's like, you know, I can appreciate that a little bit more. I'm not one of those critics where it's like, this is my rating and this is never going to change. No, man, that's the beauty of art. The way that I think about art can be different from day to day. And I've got no problem changing my stance on it. And, you know, I gave it an 8 out of 10. I'm still high on it.
That's pretty good.
Others. Yeah. Like, some people were mad that I wasn't giving it, like, you know, 10 out of 10. I'm like, whoa, hold on. 8 out of 10 is still super high. But I'll tell you this. I think the film could have been told in 2 hours or 2.5 hours, maybe. Mm-hmm. And the VFX were very uneven.
All right. There you go.
Irish Men. Go. But I do watch it. I think it's too good of a movie not to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, Colby, this was awesome. Tell people again where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can find your boy, all of my written content at ColbyTomey.com. You can follow me on all the socials at Colby Tomey on Facebook. I'm at Colby Mack. Check out my podcast, the Colby Tomey Podcast. I drop that probably about once a week. It's really whenever I want to. I'm on the Minority Report Film Podcast where I co-host that. And coming soon is the Stream Team Podcast. It's going to be the sports center for streaming. So we're going to talk about it all. Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV+, Disney+, all the pluses. Check it out.
That was a good plug right there, I got to say.
Yeah, you try, man.
Well, thanks, man. Hopefully we get you back again one of these days.
Absolutely, bro. Thank you very much. I love your podcast. I'm a fan. I really like your music. I'm going to have to hire you to do some special music.
Hell yeah.
On my stuff, man. I really, really do like your sound. But thank you very much for carving out this conversation. And I'd be welcome to come back whenever you want.
Awesome.
Sound and Vision is the name, with movie trivia being the game. The theme-based weekly wonder where you, yes, you the listener, can play along by guessing the films we're throwing at you by deciphering our cryptic clues. Join us while we break down movies in a way that only me and my weekly guests can. Come and find us on all platforms which podcasts are available and get your pop culture fix.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Colby Mack about Queen and Slim. Thanks, Colby, for joining me on the show. It was great talking to you. And if you're out there listening and you want to get into some puzzle pieces, you know, New Year is right around the corner and we are going to have a lot of movies to cover. So I'm always looking for new guest co-hosts. So get in touch. And also, you just heard an ad for another great podcast. I always play an ad for another podcast, you know, at the end of every episode. So if you're a podcaster and you've got an ad for your show, shoot me a message. I will include it in one of the future episodes. I love supporting this great podcast community, you know, Podern family, right? Whatever that means. I'm not sure, but, you know, it's cool that they're doing what they're doing. Anyway, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. You could also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And you know what? We got a Patreon if you want to, you know, send us a little bit of money each month, which we will put towards something or other. I don't know. You'll get bonus episodes, early access to new episodes that aren't up yet. I'm about to put the Terminator Dark Fate and the Jojo Rabbit episodes in there. And you can currently get the Jay and Silent Bob reboot episode that's already in there. Yeah, I'm going to be doing all kinds of new stuff in 2020. Right now, just trying to get through the end of the year, but there's going to be a lot of new stuff in there coming 2020. So, you know, I don't know if that means you should wait until the next year to become a patron, but, you know, I wouldn't stop you from becoming a patron now. That would be nice if you did. Plus, you can get my albums. That's always fun. So, I'm rambling. We should close this episode up with a piece of music like we always do, shouldn't I? We got lots of new episodes coming your way next week, including starting a whole bunch of bonus episodes. This is the end of the year, of course, and there's going to be a lot of bonus episodes, top 10 lists, all kinds of stuff. So, we got so much coming your way. Let's close this thing out, man. You know, Queen and Slim being a you know, very hip-hop heavy film. I'm going to take the opportunity to play a track from Skydro again. Skydro is a hip-hop artist here in Las Vegas that I produced coming up on a decade pretty soon ago that I produced his album. But it's a great album. I'm very proud of it. And I haven't talked to Skydro in a while, but I hope he's out there doing good. But I'm going to play one of the tracks from the album. That seems like a good fit to close this one out. Why don't I play for you guys a track called Unsolved Mysteries? like unsolved mysteries, but unsolved mist stories. I think this fits pretty well with the theme of the movie Queen and Slim. So let's close this one out with that, and we'll be back next week with more Piecing It Together.
Hey, they wrote a song about us. Turn it up, turn it up. Turn it up into a song. Hey, the police show.
Can we talk to you? Excuse me, ma'am. Is your son at home?
Say he's a murderer under the disguise of a sheep. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is how he's doing his job. It's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about your friend. Hey, Mr. Officer, I'm not talking to you. Let's talk about them.
Is Lincoln Messiah?
Here we go again. He's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is always doing his job. I've seen visions of body bags, 5-0 with bloody rags. Stop, nurse, need a cigarette, just take a bloody drag. Cause there's forensic scientists with the bloody badge. Bloody this, bloody piston, missed the bloody bag. But look once, look twice, I wear the OG gun. Check Fox News, here police man a swap to the left. Gangsta bus about a word and the rest. To the right, policeman, I aim the red light in him chest. Just another day, pound the West California police. I give the ghetto youth strength. He's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is how he's doing his job. It's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about your friend. Hey, Mr. Officer, I'm not talking to you. Let's talk about them.
Make it easy on yourself. Come
here
on.
We go again. He's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how
come
he makes his money, how many
out.
People he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is always doing his job.
When murderer this that cover of explorer and the key. Witness in the case, set him never did see. No day to try, cause him died from the pipe, while another poor mother, oh shit, hear them cry.
Say he's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is how he's doing his job. It's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about your friend. Hey, Mr. Officer, I'm not talking to you. Let's talk about them. Here we go again. He's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is always doing his job. It's like, welcome to the unsolved mysteries. That's M-I-S-S-E-D, mysteries. Welcome to the ghetto children history. Picture being handcuffed so your wrists will bleed. Crooked cops plus crooked glocks equals a crooked stop. Spin, watch your ass and plant some crooked rocks. Now I was born in this world, I didn't make it like Pac. On every dollar that I make, the system takes it right back. It's like they want it all back. It can't just be cause I'm black. I mean, Kobe was on trial, but nobody's messing with Shaq. Say he's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, so many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is how he's doing his job. It's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about your friend. Hey, Mr. Officer, I'm not talking to you. Let's talk about them. Here we go again. Feels like no tomorrow, when every day you got pain and sorrow. Like the Middle East, feels like no tomorrow. If I ain't got no soul, I'm hollow. No mark or no peace, there's no tomorrow. When every day you got to beg and borrow. So tell the police there's no tomorrow, when tomorrow's full of horror. Say he's a murderer under the disguise of a shield. And how he makes his money, how many people he kills. He's a murderer under the disguise of a badge. And killing ghetto people is how he's doing his job. It's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about your friend.
Hey,
Mr. Officer,
to reach for it, so
I'm not talking to you. Let's talk about them. Here we go again.
And all points west.